The Sesame Workshop has a long history of working with the Defense Department. Its goal is to help children of service members adapt to the sometimes difficult living conditions they face, all those moves. This year, the Muppets are tackling, you guessed it, race and diversity. For more, Federal News Network's Scott Massioni spoke with the workshop vice president, Maria Del Rocio Galarza.
As many people know, we've launched a new initiative called Coming Together, and the initiative is a Sesame Workshop-wide initiative where we are developing materials around racial justice. This is the third push, actually, for some of the materials for Sesame Street and communities, but this is actually something that started some time ago. What was important for us is to develop materials that specifically address communities that we serve, and one of them, of course, is the military community. We've been part of the military community. We feel definitely an important part of the military community since 15 years ago when we started our initiatives. We've been learning so much. And when the effort came about of Coming Together, we wanted to make sure that we addressed exactly what the military families were needing. And they do all have unique needs, as we know from our history together. And so we wanted to reach out to military families, understand what those needs were, and then create resources that address them.
This new program that you're doing, you said it's Sesame Workshop-wide, and it's working on things like race, inclusion, diversity, and those sorts of things. How does this program with military families, how do you cater this more toward them compared to the more Sesame Street Workshop-wide type initiatives?
So the military community has specific needs, and part of it is because the community is exposed to a lot of diversity. Military families travel so much and see so much. And within the military families, there's also a lot of diversity because we know that military families really come from different backgrounds and race and culturally ethnicity. So for us, it's important to address that. There's a lot of children that are, for example, biracial. The community, because it is so diverse, it presents a lot of opportunities. It's very needed for families to be able to talk about the differences that they're observing in around them, the environment. And so what military families were telling us is that they needed resources that were age-appropriate to continue those conversations. The conversations are happening because diversity is there, but they wanted more resources so that they could feel more comfortable that they're doing these conversations in an age-appropriate way.
And obviously this past year has been one where we have thought a lot about race and diversity because of the protests, because of the things that have happened with police. Was your decision to work on diversity this year informed partly because of just the things that have been happening nationally?
Absolutely. That's definitely an impetus for us to be more explicit about race and racism. And when it comes to military families in particular, because military families are so service-oriented, they really do have this as their purpose, they wanted to know how to be what we're calling upstanders, how to help themselves and others when they're confronting unfair situations because of the color of their skin, where they're from, the language that they speak. They wanted to really know concretely what they could do, what steps they can do.
And what do the children and parents see when they log on to the website, when they work with the resources that you have? What explicitly are they doing as far as worksheets or games, things like that?
So we have a range of materials. Some of the materials, for example, one of them is an interactive where you see children of with different backgrounds, and they're doing their self-portrait, and the little child and their family are creating their self-portrait as well. And as part of this exercise, they are exposed to different ways of describing oneself, and they also get to explore how they would describe themselves in a self-portrait. In addition to this, we have videos where we encourage families to have a conversation around skin color and what race means. We also have another video where they explore the concept of upstander and what does that mean. Listen, Act, Unite is the strategy for upstandership. And we also have a music video called Great Things. And the music video really highlight how to take care of ourselves. And part of it is because we've heard so much that this topic is difficult. It's difficult for a lot of families that are impacted greatly. And they wanted to have a focus on self-care. How do I take care of myself and my family when some of these incidents really can impact our day-to-day?
And could you talk a bit about the specific Muppets that are involved in this and maybe why you chose those Muppets in particular?
Yes, we have Wes and Elijah, who are part of our Sesame Street community's materials related to racial justice. We also have Elmo and Rosita. And we have Elmo and Rosita because they have been part of the Military Families Initiative for 15 years. Elmo's dad is in the military. We've established that. And Rosita's dad is a veteran. So for us, it's very important, of course, to include them in this initiative and making sure that they they're part of presenting these important messages.
And finally, could you talk a little bit about the work that went into creating these materials? I know that Sesame Workshop works really hard to work with child psychologists and other sorts of groups to ensure that these are resources that will actually be very beneficial to children and their parents.
Absolutely. We work with a group of experts. We have advisories where the experts can tell us what they think are the main messages and strategies that we should be following to help children and families. We also have focus groups with families themselves, and we really ask parents what they need and what are some of the issues and the topics that they might want to address. We have also a focus group with providers, and the providers tell us what's happening in their programs. And some of them serve families, some of them serve children themselves. And so it is a mix of all of these different groups of people that tell us what are the main messages that we should include in our materials and also the approach.
Maria Del Rocio Galarza, Vice President of Educational Content for U.S. Social Impact at the Sesame Workshop, speaking with Federal News Network's Scott Massioni. Check out Scott's story at federalnewsnetwork.com.
Hello, and welcome to the Lessons in Leadership podcast. I am your host, Shane Canfield, CEO of WEPA. Today, I'm thrilled to be joined by Vice Admiral Cutler Dawson. Cutler has had an incredible career serving our country for 35 years in the Navy, where he attained the rank of Vice Admiral. And during his service, he had numerous assignments afloat and ashore, including Commander, 2nd Fleet, Striking Fleet Atlantic, and in Washington at the Pentagon and on Capitol Hill, where he was the Navy's Chief of Legislative Affairs. Immediately following his retirement from active duty in 2004, he became the president and CEO of Navy Federal Credit Union, the world's largest credit union, where he served for 14 years. Under his leadership, Navy Federal grew from 2 million to 8 million members. Phenomenal. Cutler, welcome and thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Shane.
You've had a fascinating career across both military and the private sector. Can you tell us a little bit more about your background and your professional journey?
Well, I started out at the Naval Academy, where I graduated in 1970, and then, as you mentioned, spent 35 years in the Navy with six actual afloat commands. The first one was when I was 27 years old. I didn't know enough to be scared of anything, and it was probably one of the highlights of my career. And then after I retired after 35 years, I went to work at Navy Federal Credit Union as the CEO, where I spent my next 14 years. I'm currently retired and enjoying life, and it's been a great run for me.
How would you describe your leadership style, and how's that developed over the years?
My style has been quite consistent. I believe, and I learned this in the Navy, that you have to go to the deck plates to see what is going on. And you have to learn what your people do and how they do it so you can help them to be better at it and more efficient and more productive. It's something that you need to do all the time. I remember I used to tell folks that you don't want to retreat to your cabin. And what I mean by that is the longer you're in a position, the less you think you have to get out and about. But that should be the opposite. You should get out and about more, because people change, situations change, and you've got to figure out a way to get to them and find out what they're doing and what you can do to help them.
We'll talk a little bit more about your book, but I read it, From Seed to the C-Suite. Fantastic read. You talk about the deck plates in that as well. I would encourage everyone to get a copy of this and read some more detail about going to the deck plates. Cutler, who was the most impactful leader in your life, and what quality did you admire about them?
I had numerous while I was in the Navy, but the quality that I enjoyed the most was the leaders that got to know me as an individual, and that they cared about me, and I could tell that they cared about me. And they were not only my leaders, but they were my mentors. And I remember one particular one, Bill Schiffer, when I had my first assignment at the Pentagon. I would go in to see him with my problem of the day, and I knew that he had numerous problems of his own, but he would stop and he would focus on me, and he would make me feel like I was the most important person in his world. And I tried to do that throughout my career. But really, it's about caring for your people.
Cutler, in reading your book, there was a quote you used that you used to inspire those people that work for you. And it really got my attention. And it was you are the captain of your own ship. I wonder if you can talk a little bit about what that means and how it was useful to you and the leaders you were developing.
Absolutely. What I mean by captain of your own ship, when you are the captain of a ship, sometimes you're in the middle of the ocean and you don't have anybody to turn to make decisions. You don't have anybody to turn to ask, what should I do now? You have to be the captain of that ship. And I translated that into, let's say, Navy Federal's organization, where I would tell branch managers that I said, you are the captain of the ships of Navy Federal. You're the ones that are facing the members or customers, as others call them, every day. And you have to make decisions without a lot of guidance in some cases and without a lot of time. So be the captain of your own ship. Step up, make decisions, do what you think is right, and you never can go wrong.
I think that is so important. And you have to give your people a little bit of latitude to take some risk as well, because there is risk for them in doing that and risk to your organization.
That's right. And I mentioned that I took command of my first ship with 5 years in the Navy, and I was 27 years old. Well, my boss had 32 years in the Navy, and his guidance to me when I first met him was, Cutler, you do the right thing and I'll back you up all the way. What a wonderful way to spend an assignment with backup and guidance like that.
What great advice. It's clear leadership is a topic you're passionate about. You wrote the book we mentioned before, From C to C-Suite. Can you tell us a little bit about that project?
Yes. When I was at Navy Federal, I would tell sea stories as parables to get my point across. And folks would tell me, Cutler, we like your stories. It gives us a picture of what you're trying to tell us. Now, what else are they going to say? They work for me, but I took it as a compliment, and it was. And my wife encouraged me to write a book, and I needed a co-author to help me. And I found a lady named Taylor Keelan, who was the perfect co-author. She turned in my stories into wonderful chapters that I'm very proud of.
Where can listeners find a copy?
Well, you can get it on Amazon, and you can also get it on the Naval Institute website. And I might add that any proceeds from the book, Navy Federal uses to give to charity.
Fantastic. Cutler, thank you very much. Really enjoyed your time and your lessons and in leadership and sharing with us your life story. And I've learned a lot both from talking to you today and reading your book. And thank you very much for your time.
It's my pleasure. And I would like to add one thing if I could, Shane. During my assignments in Washington, D.C., I gained the utmost respect for the civilians that work here every day. They're hardworking, they're dedicated, and they have my eternal gratitude. I got to come and go from the Pentagon. They stayed every day and worked in Washington when I got to go out and enjoy being at sea.
Perfect. Thank you. Yeah, WAPO serves civilian federal employees, but your comment is well taken because the interaction between the two is continuous, it's nonstop, and it's critical. So the career civil servants, as well as career military, our country would not be where it is today without them.
I totally agree. And I can tell you from the U.S. Navy standpoint, we couldn't operate like we do without them being the backbone of what we do.
Thank you very much for your time today, Cutler. And to everyone listening to Lessons in Leadership podcast, we'll see you next time.